Blog Talk Radio.
Sarah figured out that by switching to Metro PCS, she gets two free smartphones.
Your barbecue ribs are the best.
Take the rest home with you, Sarah.
Just like she figured out that by visiting her in-laws, she doesn't have to cook for the rest of the week. You too figure it out. Get two free 4G LTE smartphones from top brands like Samsung and LG after instant rebate when you switch. Metro PCS. Wireless. Figure it out. Coverage not available in some areas. Sales tax not included. See store or metropcs.com for details and terms and conditions.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to Unlimited Realities. I am your host, Lisa Zimmer, and we have such a wonderful, special woman on today. Her name and our guest is Ilanka Harezi, and she is the author of both A Soul Breathing and Stepping Into the Rain. She's an expert in quantum mechanics, traveled the world in her search for understanding inner peace, and in her journey, she brought together an international team of scientists for advances in healthcare. And utilizing this think tank for over 20 years, she became researcher and expert in both quantum mechanics and scalar energy technology, which ended up creating the Tesla technology utilized in the Philip Steen Tesla watch. Ilanka, thank you so much for being on our show today. How are you?
I'm just great. Thank you so much, Lisa, for having me.
Oh, Ilanka, you're just such a wonderful guest. I have such a buzz going on all over the internet with your show today. I have been getting emails since Tuesday. So I'm thrilled to be giving this information and wisdom to our audience and our listening audience here. Let's talk a little bit about how you got to where you are today, because it's been quite an interesting journey, and I want to bring our audience into the groove of your essence and your energy. So, you know, I'm really touched by the fact that you grew up normal.
Well, not exactly.
Well, I mean, you know, about as normal a life as everyone, you know, experiences in growing up in Southern Illinois and, you know, living a kind of a normal childhood. But let's talk a little bit about your, you know, how you got here in your world travels in your life, and then we'll get into the quantum mechanics and aspect of it in a little bit. How's that sound?
That sounds great. I was actually raised on an airport, if you can call that normal.
Wow.
And I thought all kids tanked up airplanes in the morning before they went to school. I thought that was normal. So to me, it was normal. Probably everybody else, it wasn't too normal. But Anyway, from there I went to boarding school and had a wonderful experience in school. I was very studious kid, kind of a nerd, I guess. But then I decided that I would. My parents really didn't have the money to send me to law school, which is what I really wanted to do. So, and I couldn't really leave right away. So what I became was an interior designer because I was very creative. And I'd had a couple one-man art shows in school and before I was 18. And, you know, I was very, very good in art and creative things. So I went and became an interior designer and right away became sort of famous. I traveled all over the world. I worked in the Middle East. I was lucky enough to be around during the time of President Sadat and his open door policy. And so I worked very closely with him in the Middle East and doing a lot of great things there. I was there when they worked on the Aswan Dam project and was able to work with those Bedouins at that time through him and do a lot of great things in Egypt. I was ended up being there about once a month as a sole purchasing agent for four of the largest Middle Eastern construction companies. So
wow.
Along with my interior design, I was procuring products for a large part of the Middle East, which was kind of strange in that time for a woman to do.
Mm-hmm.
Not as strange now, but back in that time, it was very very strange. But then, and so that paid the bills. And what I really loved to do was to travel with all the scientists all over the world and to what we were doing was we were measuring extraordinary people, their brainwaves, using fast Fourier analysis. And when we would hook them up to the electrodes with the fast Fourier analysis, and we used a Faraday cage, and what we found was that the Faraday cage did not take out the low ELF, the extremely low frequencies, nor did it take out any scalar. So really, what we were measuring were very unique signals given off by the brain by people who could do extraordinary things. Or they were writers, or they were artists, or they were people that would go into that, what I call the zone. And when they would go into that zone, they were always producing an extremely low frequency of 7 to 9 hertz. So that was quite interesting to me because I knew that the Schumann resonance of the Earth was 7 to 9 hertz. So it's like we were really connected in a way to Mother Earth as we both had the same magnetic signature. Of course, there's a lot of differentials, but you know, in the bottom line, that 7 to 9 hertz was very important. Healers, when they were doing their work, or shamans, it was always 7 to 9 hertz. And it dithered between those, never really on one frequency, of course, just like the Schumann resonance of the Earth. It dithers. It doesn't stay right on 7 point. People say, oh, it's 7.83. Well, no, it's kind of a median point when you average everything out, because the Earth jumps around, you know, up into like 16 hertz, just like we do. And when we're angry or when we're upset, you know, we go up and we dither at maybe 13, 16 hertz, but the best frequency, the calming frequency of when you're doing yoga, meditation, prayer, 7 to 9 hertz. So I thought, wouldn't it be great if we could be that all the time?
Right.
Wouldn't that be great? And so I got all the scientists together and we started in 1986. I sold everything and got a Quonset hut in the middle of a cornfield, and brought the 10 scientists that I thought were really the best, who were actually working for the government at the time, doing a lot of their ELF studies.
Good snag there, Alanka.
Oh, it was, and they were sick of working, you know, doing that stuff. They wanted to play, you know, and also they didn't want to do it for negative reasons, you know. You know, like mind control and all those crazy things that they had been working on. So they were ready to put their mind into doing something positive for the world. So I caught them right at the right time. And a lot of them were getting pretty old. Puharj was in his 70s, and Bob Beck was in his late 60s, and Ed Skilling was in his 70s. You know, so a lot of them were like getting up there, and you know, now we've lost almost all of them. And so it's really great that I had that wonderful opportunity of 20 years to work with these fabulous pioneers. And I really didn't have a physics background other than a few courses in college and high school. So, but that really helped me because I wasn't, you know, my focus was not in a box. It was totally out of the box. And I would make suggestions to them that they go, you know, and yeah. I'm making suggestions, but it's only because I didn't know any better, you know, not to make those suggestions. They go, you know, that could work because we're really not working with the norm here, or, you know, it's really pioneering work, the scalar stuff. Right. So those 20 years were all spent doing this wonderful research. The Tesla watch was our first product, and that really funded us the whole time, which was wonderful because we didn't have to ask for money or grants or, you know, be beholden to anyone. It was our work and only our work, and we could do whatever we wanted. So I did some guerrilla management, and we always funded ourselves for those 20 years with Tesla. So then in 2002, I decided to start writing my books, and I went away for a couple months, and I was in Miami, and on the way down, I saw this watch in Sky Mall, and I thought, oh, I really like the look of that watch. And I found out the people that made them were in Miami. So we went and met with them, and that's how Philip Stein Tesla began. So they really wanted to do a high-end watch. I didn't want that so much, but they said, well, no, you have to start high-end and then you go down. I said, okay, but I want to make sure that we can sell, you know, the Tesla, because the Tesla is for everybody. Well,
and
about 2000...
Let me just make a comment. That's from Tesla was taken from Nikola Tesla, which was a protege of Thomas Edison. Is that right?
Exactly. Exactly.
I just wanted to put that little blip in there because I find that really incredible.
Yeah, all of our work was based on Tesla's work, and really my idea of do no harm. And we found that we are a body. Not a body with a field, we're a field with a body. And if you give that body the right energy and information, it can heal itself. So all you have to do is give it the right energy and information. It's this incredible mechanism that's miraculous in nature, and it can take care of itself. Any emotional trauma, anything that you go through that really is spiritually hard, that gnaws at your heart, those things stay out in the field and can actually come in and affect the body. And Dr. Valerie Hunt and I have been working on a project that will actually see those patterns in the field 2 years before they impact the body, and then we can get rid of them while they're still in the field before they come in and affect the material aspects of what we are and who we are. So that's a very important thing, because we see a lot of things, cancer and various illnesses and pains and whatever, are some electromagnetic in nature, and others are what is out there in the field as far as information is concerned.
Wow.
So we found that we're really all connected, and we're connected. Imagine like sand on the beach. And if you go and you remove one grain of sand on the beach, do you change the beach? Yes, in fact, you do, because all of those pieces of sand are touching each other. So you change the whole beach by removing that one bit of sand. So we think we're not important, but really we're very important, because we're that one grain of sand on the beach that can change that whole beach. We can make a difference because of our connection to all the other grains of sand, to everyone in the world. And those small things, if we remember them, will help us to make better choices spiritually and, you know, with our life toward others and in relationships, etc. Because those effects, those choices we make, go out into the world like a ripple effect and can change a lot of things. Like, we're seeing such conscious changes right now. It's amazing. I mean, and I was speaking to a press conference in Washington about a year and a half ago when things were really not good. Not that they're not good now, but anyway, they were really, really bad. They were starting to really make people nervous. And I said, you know, guys, this is, you shouldn't be upset about this. I'll tell you the truth. This is exactly what I've been praying for. Because unless we have this shakeup, people are not going to change. They're going to continue to be materialistic instead of holding their family close. They're going to continue to go out there and want bigger, better, more, rather than looking at and be thankful for what they have and look around them and say, wow, I really don't need that. It's a different parameter now that we're looking at, where people's consciousness is actually changing. And I see it, you know, in the world where they're wealthy people, they're not buying the diamonds, they're not wearing the diamonds, they're not wearing flashy stuff, you know, because they even feel weird about doing it. And why do they feel weird? Because that consciousness is changing. That's not because you can go around to each person and say, you should feel weird because you're wearing those diamonds that people are selling. You know, it's not. It's not because of that. It's because they feel it. They go, oh, I don't want to. You know, I don't want to wear that now. It just doesn't feel right. So consciousness is making a radical change right now. And it's just what we've prayed for. Hard. My God, it's hard. But it's just what we really wanted.
Right.
And what needed to happen in the world and around us. So I was shocked. I know it's Sunday. I leave for Russia. I'm speaking at the Economic Summit in Russia to all the world leaders. And I'm really excited about it and a little freaked out. I think I'm the only person without a huge title behind my name that's going to be there. So,
what an honor. That's incredible.
It is. And it's about my work with Shift 2012 and about the change of consciousness and about the economy of scale in corporate and the social responsibility of corporate to make this major change in consciousness and shift as well, and how we can actually do that and create peace in the world at the same time, still create a good bottom line, change our perspective of our PR and advertising to doing good things in the world and becoming known for those good things, becoming known for how we're helping to change the world rather than a beautiful full-color ad that costs us $50,000 to $100,000 a whack, you know.
Right.
So
right.
That's the basis of my speech, and I'm shocked that they wanted me to do this, you know.
Oh, that's so exciting.
It is. And actually, they put me on my speech, and then I have two other platforms that I'll be speaking with, two other panels. So it's really, really exciting. And you can imagine, in Russia, they're doing the hosting, and they're doing the picking of who gives the speeches and whatever. And, you know, to see this change that in consciousness that people are, okay, looking at this and saying, wow, we need to have this in our economic forum. Oh, my gosh. I can't imagine.
Oh, that's life-changing. And hasn't Russia been a little bit ahead of us in regard to the awareness and higher consciousness for, you know, a couple of decades anyway? Their government's been much more receptive to understanding or looking at this than the United States has, haven't they?
Well, definitely. One of my scientists actually was Victor Adaminko, who holds a lot of the Curlian patents. He did the research with Curlian, Dr. Curlian, and he was from the Russian Academy of Sciences, and he did a lot of research into psychic phenomena. So if you mean psychic phenomena, definitely they're way ahead, and they've been ahead, and, you know, they've always been into it, although our government does it as well. They just keep it more secret.
Right.
Israel is way into it as well, and they keep it secret. So it's, I think the Russians have been a little more out there with their information, but psychic phenomena is a long way from changing consciousness. You know, you have to think about who shows up when there's a world catastrophe. Rarely. Matter of fact, I don't think I have ever heard of Russia coming in to help.
True.
Think about it.
That's right.
I mean, have you ever heard of, well, the Russians came in and brought in, here's food and supplies from the Russians, you know? And look at their,
right.
You know, this is their big commando airplane coming in, their helicopters, you know, coming in with food. You never hear that.
That's
ever.
True.
So that's why, to me, this is a major shift to see this coming from them, where they are welcoming me with open arms. And they wrote my secretary, and they said, we want to invite her to be on this other platform as well because she's one of the most important speakers that we have.
Oh, my goodness,
now, that's
Bianca.
The
How
big
incredible.
Shock. No, because I'm with the chairman of Citibank. I'm with the chairman of Morgan Stanley, with the head of the president of the Russian Federation, the prime minister of China. We're talking about this type of. I'm the only little guy there in the whole thing, and so I'm going, oh my goodness, they're really getting this, you know?
Yeah.
It's something that really touched my soul was I was meeting with one of the Russian fellow that was putting this all on in Miami, and I said, well, what can, because he invited me to be in the pavilion with the host city, St. Petersburg, and China. They're doing a pavilion together, and they invited me to be in that pavilion. And so I said, you know, I'm so honored, thank you very much, you know, that I could do this. And, you know, what can I do? Can I bring? Can I, you know, help in any way? Can I show up a couple of days early to help? You know, I know what it is to put a pavilion together in a huge booth like that. And he said, no. He says, I don't want you to even think about carrying coffee or doing any kind of thing. He says, I want you to complete your mission while you're here.
Oh, yeah, that had
to
make your skin crawl.
I started crying. You know, I couldn't keep back the tears. They just well, I mean, right now even, they just well up in my eyes because, I mean, imagine, they are getting it. I said, did he read my speech? And Felix, my friend, said, oh, yes, he knows. I'm going, oh, my goodness.
Well, so where does this come in regard to how we as a society are evolving? Because you've got Russia now bringing you front and center to tell the world exactly how electronically and electromagnetically we're connected. So we've got that piece coming out in a very upfront forum, and how do we, in our simplicity, you know, evolve through this? I mean, they're getting it, but how can we as an American society, or, you know, outside of this forum, affect the world in regard to energy, our mission, our purpose?
You know, one good deed at a time. One good deed at a time. That's what's important. One good deed at a time. And my program is called Shift 2012. It's actually an action program that I'm putting together and going to launch at this forum. And it's a website that I'm linking all the charities together for the first time in like a Facebook page. So it's a social network for charities where they'll be able to put, you know, what they're about, upload, download things, have meeting tabs, have places where they can get money, where they can make applications for money. They can procure volunteers. We have something called the wormhole that they can go in and they can ask for, oh, I need two computers for, you know, my handicapped kids program, and two corporate or two private people sitting around saying, oh, I've got two computers, I can send it. And we'll get FedEx and UPS to, you know, make it their social responsibility to pay for the shipping, you know, for those things. So it's a whole big thing called UnthinkLink. And that's going to be launched. And then that's the first part. That's the immediate part, linking everybody so they're talking together. The second part is the action plan. And the action plan is about, now we have the charities talking to each other. We have them out there. They have the money. They have the volunteers. They have the people on the ground. They're trying to do things. They're in other countries. Now I'm going to put them in teams. We have the builders. We have the SRs, the social responsibility people, and the media people. So now the builders go in, and we take a big building. We bring everybody to that building because it's very difficult to administer anything to people that are miles away or that are scattered over a big radius. It's almost impossible to be able to help them, educate them, et cetera. So what we do is we bring them all together to one place. And then we can start administering education and health and all those various things. Then we get them to build their own cluster homes, and we help them to do it. So it raises their own human dignity. They built their place. It's not somebody giving it. We don't want to give them the fish. We want to teach them how to fish.
Yeah.
And we want to do the fish hatcheries and the spirulina and, you know, all the various things that they do that they can build their own society together. Then the media group comes in and they tell the world about what's happening and what people are doing and, you know, patting them on the back. These are the heroes. Look at what they've done, you know, in their village, et cetera. So making these three teams, those are the action teams, and now we've come together and created a whole society that has a great social network, has education, has medical. After we've moved them out of the main building into their little places, now that big building can become industrial, can become cottage industry, you know, all sorts of things, a school. All of that. So, and they've built that building and learned something with unskilled labor. They've learned how to do in that building,
right.
Create in that building. So that's the third part. And then the third part is about Jibba and about the children, because that's our future. And
right.
That's a whole other part about empowering children. So these are the things that I'm going to, kind of revolutionary ideas, but not so, because they're all things that already exist. I'm just organizing it to make it happen so that we're like one focused laser beam to bring peace to the world, to get rid of poverty, to feed the hungry, to get rid of, eradicate disease and HIV, et cetera, et cetera.
Now, is this Shift 2012 a website? Is it shift2012.com?
Yeah, after this weekend, UnthinkLink will be up. Shift 2012 will not be up yet, but
okay.
UnthinkLink, UNTHINKLINK, will be up. Right now it's demo on UnthinkLink, if you
okay.
just want to go take a peek at it. And they're loading stuff as we speak. My speech
Wonderful.
Will probably be up as well. It's animated. The whole thing is animated, my speech that I'll be giving, and that will be probably on the we'll put up at Shift 2012 site if your viewers want to look for it, shift2012.com, and I'll have my whole speech up there, probably, hopefully
oh,
by
wonderful.
Next week.
Oh, wonderful.
I'm really excited
about this is huge. This is unbelievably huge, and I'm looking at this as pretty much a stepping point again for you in this whole other field of actually being an ambassador for the world here in regard to higher consciousness. I mean, you're really coming in on a platform with these people who have a very analytical approach, and you're opening up their minds in a way that they
yes.
You know, they're not yes. going to not be able to walk away with a seed of something from this. And that's
well,
exciting.
You know, let's say even 5 years ago, definitely 10 years ago, this would never be something that they'd even be interested in. But now, you know, the social responsibility aspect is very, very important, and people are tuning into it. From all corners of the globe, even financial people that I've been talking to lately, market makers and various capitalists, et cetera, they're very interested in my business plan as far as what I'm doing as far as the social responsibility aspect is concerned. And that I find very, very interesting, that Wall Street is now paying attention to that.
Why do you think so? Why do you think the switch?
Because people now are searching. They want something more in their life. They found out that material things are not where it's at, and matter of fact, not fulfilling whatsoever, and that they can lose it on a dime. And so knowing that they can lose it on a dime, it becomes something very, very important to them to look to a higher source. Something that gives them a satisfaction and fulfills that need that they thought was about buying and material stuff and acquiring and all of that. Now they're finding out just by doing one simple good deed or one small thing for someone or bringing that family member closer, that it's so satisfying, that their life is so much more fulfilled and full and rich. You know, it's really sad to me, people that never do anything for anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
They're cheating themselves so much, because there's something that's given back to them of such a high nature, of such a high energy, that it can never be taken away. And it fulfills the spirit in such a way that there can be nothing like it. So you know, I think people are just now finding that out, that there is a fulfillment there. I know I moved to Nashville, and I see it so much in these people. It's just such a big difference between here and Miami, where I went into Starbucks the other day and pulled up and went to pay for my coffee, and they said, oh, the lady in front of you paid and said, have a great day.
Oh, you know? Yeah.
Imagine that.
Yeah, that's hard to come by in the state of Florida, isn't it?
Never happens, I assure you. I assure you. You know, and then the other day, it was raining like horrible, just really, really bad rain and shivering cold. And this guy is standing outside our window. We're at a stoplight, and he's pounding on the window, you know, pounding on the window. And Maria's sitting next to me, and she's looking out the window. She's going, oh, my gosh, you know, we're from Miami. She's scared to death to roll down the window. You know, she's looking like the guy's going to attack her any minute and break the window. And so finally, I said, Maria, just roll down the window. He rolls down the window. By this time, the guy's totally soaked to the bone, and he's standing there. Hey, ladies, this is your coffee cup. You must have left it on top of your car.
Oh, my goodness. You are kidding me. Yeah, that gives you faith in human nature. You know, that's those little acts. It's amazing how a simple little act of kindness that,
small,
you know, when
but
it's so easy to be void of like appreciating that. I mean, when you're stuck in your head in this, you know, craziness of living in life. And oh, that just is really refreshing. That's a beautiful commentary.
It is. And you think Florida, I mean, they're trying to run you down, you know, with the car rather than help you with getting your coffee mug in the pouring rain. So, you know, I'm seeing this now, particularly up here. It's widespread. Of course, the Midwest is always a lot more friendly, but in the South, but, you know, I hope that it reaches out to those areas of, you know, of Florida, of, you know, the people that really need to open their hearts and experience what a wonderful thing that is of giving and of receiving. It's great. So,
And let's talk a little bit here about your book, A Soul Breathing, because in A Soul Breathing, you give a tremendous amount of information in regard to our consciousness, our evolution, our electromagnetic field, and basically how, you know, prayer and miracles work. And let's talk a little bit about our emotional fields, especially when they kind of show up like kind of erratically. Because what you were talking about, like on the grain of sand on the beach, when you take one out, you actually do alter the beach. The same thing with our emotional fields. If we're putting out this negative juice, it affects others. And when we put out the positive juice, like you're talking about of the people in the Nashville area versus the Miami area, yes, completely different vibration.
Yes.
So, you know, how does that change? I mean, you know, we have music that affects us. We have sounds and noises. We have all these things that kind of like bombard our world. And you know, dealing with our emotional field, how does that show up in our chaotic patterns in our life?
It definitely affects the patterns in our life and what happens to us in our life. It's, you know, I always remember, nothing is as final as we make it. Remember, nothing is as final as we make it. Whenever something happens, just take 1 second and run that sentence through your mind. Nothing is as final as we make it. And I found that 80% of what we conjure up in our mind never happens. The other 20% we can do nothing about. So just let it go, ride with it, do the best you can, and but keep a very positive attitude, because also I found that many of those things that we try to conjure up that are just devastating and life-threatening or, you know, end mm-hmm. our life and our whole existence end up to be really not a whole lot, end up to be not such a big deal in the end. There's always, you know, a silver lining to it or a way that we can look at it that is that the outcome will be just fine. So, and particularly if we have that positive attitude, because that energy goes through and attracts other like energy to come in and make that change, to change that whole thing around and make it okay. And I'm talking about, you know, even very serious things. I had a situation where I had a small child that we rescued high in the Himalayas. And she was going to, this is a very interesting story, I think I'm tell you about this. the parents had put her in a woodshed to die because she had a double cleft palate. And they had had a child before that and had a cleft palate, and they let him die in the woodshed. And so they felt that this child was cursed, and so they had put her in the woodshed to die. We were doing a documentary at the time, and Lama Tenzin, who was leading the children and doing this whole documentary, found this child and brought her back. We took her to Operation Smile, got the cleft palate fixed. She was such a happy little child. We found two people to adopt the child. It was just a wonderful experience with this child. And then tragedy struck. They'd gone to Disney World, came back. We had gotten her little Minnie Mouse dresses and filmed her, you know, and all this sort of thing. Everybody was so excited. I went to work. By the time I got to work, Maria, the maid, had called me and said, "You won't believe this, but the child drowned in the bathtub."
Oh, no.
The Tibetan lady who was with her, brought her from India, had left her in the bathtub with her toys like a playpen, and the child had pulled herself up on, you know, the it didn't have those two little knobs. It had just one, the big knob in the center that you pull to turn the water
right.
on.
Right.
She definitely grasped that, and it turned and turned the water on. And the tub was very shallow and not very wide, and so it filled up quickly, and the child drowned. It was the most devastating thing. I thought I could not live through it. I thought it just killed us all. But then, not only that, but they arrested the woman.
Oh, you're kidding.
In jail. They arrested her for murder.
For murder, not negligence?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It was like, yeah, it was really, really hard. And I thought, oh, my God, I mean, I can't live through this. Can't do this. And I kept thinking to myself, okay, nothing is as final as we make it. Okay, it's nothing's as final as we make it. It's going to be okay. Even though I could see that poor little child, you know, just broke my heart. And so it ended up, though, that the woman, a woman that I had not seen for ages, she was a very, very, very dear friend. And she was an attorney, and I called her and I said, I need you to help me. And she was actually did more real estate kind of attorneys, type of attorney. And everybody was getting crazy and calling, you know, wanting to get Roy Black and all kinds of people like that. And I said, no. I felt very secure that we should get somebody very quiet because this was in the news and it was a big thing, and especially my position, you know, and everybody knew me down there. It was just kind of going out of craziness. And so anyway, she came in and she proved that the child had in fact pulled herself up, and she clocked how long it took to put the water in the bathtub and showed that it was not negligence. She had put her in there with her toys, and that it was an accident. And it took like several times for the prosecuting attorney. We had to go in like three or four times before they decided not to place charges. But it was the hardest thing I ever, ever went through. That's devastating for not only the child, but then this woman whose life really was, you know, harmed forever. I mean, it's something that she'll never get over. And she was suicidal. So when I got her out, we're on the 27th floor of a building. I had to worry about her jumping out of the window. So I had to watch her like a hawk the whole time. It was such a stressful, horrible time. And but it all turned out fine. She got back to India. Her family was really against her. They had shut her out. I pleaded with them to forgive her and to actually help her because she needed help at that time. It wasn't anything she did on purpose, and that she needed help to heal. And the forgiveness and the unconditional, part of each of family member should be shown to this poor soul, to what she was going through, because her torture of having had that happen on her watch was really stressful enough and pain enough, and that that was definitely enough that she had to go through. So, but what a hard thing. And so but we all grew from that because we saw, all right, we have to be more mindful. We have to be more watchful. We have to be more, attentive. It made me very attentive and in tune to the very small things. Like, I knew this very simple woman could do something kind of stupid like that. Mm-hmm. Because she was from India where they don't even have bathtubs. To her, it was a playpen. It was a way for her to keep the child. They don't have bathtubs there. They kind of wash off with a hose,
Right.
And, she's a very simple person that thought in very simple ways. So it made me now connect and learn from that, okay, now I have to think, okay, on what level is this person and can they be trusted with what duties that I'm giving them or putting them in charge of. It was a very, very good lesson for me.
And it's mindfulness, and that's what I feel is the turning point that's going on in our evolution as a world right now. There's more of those who are aware, there's more of a conscientious mindfulness in everything, in what they think and what they say and what they eat and what they do and how they're interacting with one another, and also what effect they have upon another in a helpful, supportive, humanitarian way. And I find that, though there's that delineating factor and that point where you've got those who do and those who don't. And those who don't even are being affected positively, even if it triggers them on some negative first. They are being affected and touched by those who are mindful, conscientious, aware, humanitarian souls. And and that's the energy and vibe we want to increase. That's what we want. That's why it's so wonderful you're going to Russia to talk about this, because you're going to get into the minds of these very analytical people who have maybe thought about it, but you're bringing it, mainstream. You're not making it this airy-fairy, flaky, aspect, this
kumbaya
carnival show.
Yeah,
exactly.
Kumbaya kind of thing, yeah. No, this is an action plan. This is what we can do to change the world. Now let's all hold hands and make this happen. That's what my speech is about. And we can change the world one person at a time. We just have to think in a different way and organize ourselves. And, when you think of, psychic phenomena or clairvoyance or those kind of things, people say, how does that happen? It's the same way. Like, you're thinking about grandma and suddenly grandma calls. Everybody's had that experience.
Right.
And it's because grandma's energy, even though it's way far away, minefield to minefield to minefield to minefield, that beach of sand finally touches grandma. And there is a communication through that field that we know grandma's there. And grandma knows that it is thinking about us at that time, so we're getting that message. We women, how do we know when a guy's out cheating on us? I mean, we know it, right? We know it in a minute. They come back and we just look at them and we go, he's cheating on me. You know, how can that be? All right, can't happen, can't be happening. No, his field is screaming it at us. First of all, he's guilty. So he's screaming, I'm guilty. And we're picking that up through the field, that exchange of information. We walk into a room, there's somebody over in the corner, and we right away feel, oh, I don't like that person, don't want to even talk to that person, don't want to meet that person. Why? Because we're exchanging information in that field long before we ever say a word or touch them. Some other people we meet and we think, oh, my God, there's a connection through 20 lifetimes, and we know it, you know, and we feel it, and we're exchanging that information. Oh, hi, where have you been? Oh, my God, you know, it's taken us this long to connect again. We know that. You know, it's all there. All that information, and it's just like an outpouring of spirit and a bonding, and you just kind of take up from almost where you left off maybe hundreds of years ago, you know. So that is all that information is in the field. Now, not in the brain. Not in the brain. The brain is only the battery that creates the electrical impulses because we are electrical. Remember, when we read out, we get an EEG, that's electrical, an EKG with the heart, that's electrical. We are electrical beings. Mm-hmm. So we are creating these fields and these spontaneous electrical impulses, receiving and transmitting all the time. So the brain is the battery. It's not where the information is held. The information is in the field, not in the brain, not at
all. So how does the brain interact with the field in regard to thought processing and projection?
Okay, the brain creates what's called a scalar or a quantum. We have magnetic fields, and we have electrical fields being produced. Those come at each other and cancel each other out. It's called a bucking field. It creates a bucking field where it cancels out to 0 point. That 0 point, like in Maxwell's equation, he talks about the 0 point. The 0 point is where now all information can ride on top of that waveform. So the brain, creating the magnetic and electrical field of all these various frequencies, now collapses them to zero, carries that huge waveform out into space, into everywhere, because it's something that there's no loss of energy to the distance traveled. So grandma could be on the moon, and you're still thinking of grandma, and she's still going to get it because there's no loss of energy to that distance traveled, none at all, way out in space. Doesn't matter, no loss of energy. And all information can be carried on that waveform. Any information at all can be carried on that waveform.
So our thoughts do affect our field, but it's not necessarily derived from our thought. Is that what you're saying?
No, our thought is the field.
Right.
The thought is the field. The generation of the energy for the thought comes from the brain.
Okay,
the
so the thought and the brain, we're separating the thought from the brain, right?
Right, right.
Okay, gotcha.
Right.
Okay.
When you die, you lose 2 ounces. Dr. Keebling Ross measured, I don't know how many people, you lose exactly 2 ounces. What is that? That's the field starting to leave.
Wow.
That's the soul. That's the field leaving. Because this body is just a spacesuit that we're walking around in, on a spaceship going 80,000 miles an hour through space, our Earth, and we are these incredible, invisible quantum spirits that are inhabiting this spacesuit to experience, to make choices, and to raise our resonance higher and higher and higher, so that when we leave, we're going to a higher place of resonance, a higher vibration, a higher place of spiritual awareness. That's our job. Our job here is to experience. We can make the wrong choices. Okay, that's okay. We're going to make wrong choices. We're human. That's what we're here to do, is to learn, experience. It's when you don't learn anything from them and you stay in that lower resonance,
right,
that it's bad. There's no bad or good. But if you want to put it as bad or good, it's only bad if you don't learn from those experiences that you have. And they're only bad if you don't learn from them. If you progress and you go, oh, never do that again, and you don't, then you have, okay, left that energy behind, and now you've raised to the next level. And that's our job, raising levels, raising our level of resonance and harmonics to a higher and higher state. That's what we're here for.
And as we raise our level, those we touch, those we affect, we actually elevate their level of awareness and consciousness as well, whether it's understood or not. And that's the beauty of that invisible field, that electromagnetic energy that we're all connected to, and maintain our individualism as well. That's the beauty of it.
Right, right. Exactly. And, you know, I think when we – I'll give you a little instance to give you an idea of how that works. Let's say that we're going to go to this great elaborate ball, and you're outside washing your car. You've got on, you know, old raggedy clothes, and you're all stinky. It's a bad hair day, you know, makeup, really not bad. And I come up, and I'm in my shiny Mercedes, and I'm all in a – gown, sequin gown, coiffure, nails done, everything. I grab you, do not give you a chance to do anything, grab you, throw you in the car, drive up to this incredible chateau, you know, where everything is top rate, lobster, caviar flowing, Mother Teresa's there in a new veil, John Wayne, you know, all the latest movie stars are all there. And I drag you out, and everyone's in tuxedos and gowns, and there you are. Will you want to stay? Will you feel comfortable? I don't think so. So we are going to make that choice of what level of resonance we are comfortable with. We can't lie to ourselves or to anyone else. We still look like a ragged bum with a bad hair day, and we will not be able to be with that shining white veil of Mother Teresa. We can't.
Right.
We just can't do it. We won't be comfortable. We will choose where we go and what level that our resonance will be in tune with, and the souls that we will be with at that time. And that is a much higher, greater place. That is eternity, not the short period of boot camp that we're in right now. It's where we're going to go.
And in a real practical day-to-day existence, we do that every day with our thoughts and our choices. We resonate at a level in regard to who we pull into our lives, who we interact with in a day, who crosses our paths, and even what challenges we encounter in a day. It's all reflective upon the energy and resonance we're putting out there, our essence. And, you know, it's that same thing of, you know, peanut butter budget and a caviar, you know, desire. You can't resonate on the same. You've got to, if you've got, you know, that peanut butter mentality, you're going to pull in maybe some really good nuts, but, you know, it's never going to go up any much more than that. So, you know, that's what I love about, you know, how you're taking this incredible scientific knowledge, this study, this incredible think tank that you've utilized for 20 years, and you're bringing it into our homes. You're making it common for the everyday man to accept and look at and say, hey, I can change my reality by how I'm perceiving it and how I'm interacting and how I'm resonating.
Yeah.
And the first thing is to, you know, get rid of the garbage and
garbage
being
in,
aware.
Garbage out.
Garbage in, garbage out. And the mindfulness and eliminating that monkey mind, that lack, that fear, that, you know, that little mind.
And right. It's to work on a model of abundance and not scarcity. That's really what I want to talk to these nations about, is to model their programs on a model of abundance and not scarcity. Not everything for me, because by giving to others, you get back a bigger abundance than even what material things are. And even the material things, they'll follow on that intangible grace that comes from good works, from love, from being unconditional. That will all ride in on it and bless you in a million, million, million ways. You don't have to expect it. You don't have to think about it. It will just happen, because that's the law of abundance. It's the model of abundance. And when we start to carry that into our businesses and into our lives with our employees and with our friends and with our relatives and with our family, then everything changes. Everything changes. So this is what we really have to... And there is a scientific basis to all of this, a real way that it works, is what I found out. It's not woo-woo. And it's not,
right,
you know, just, okay, this is a spiritual dogma and just try to believe it and go on down the road and, you know, jump around three times and flap your hands and it's all going to be better. No.
Right.
You have to do every day. You know, you have to live it. You have to walk it. And when you start walking it, you don't have to say a word. People know. They know because that field is being exchanged with them, and you don't have to say one word about who you are or what you've done or what you're about.
Right. You're right.
You just have to walk it and talk it. As a matter of fact, it's better if you don't.
Let them get
it that way.
That's right. Because
somebody that
talks
has to talk about it, they don't have it.
That's
you can
exactly
be sure.
Right. Amen on that, Ilonka. Amen on that. Yes.
If they're trying to convince you, then most likely they don't have it. And
keep
them trying to convince
dating.
You makes it worse. Oh, yeah.
And there's, you know, and there's so much of that today, because we are on this precipice of opening and expanding our consciousness. And you're going to find a lot of flakes along the field. And that's why I love that you've got this so legitimized, that you're going to Russia to speak to ambassadors and leaders of countries and the world in general, in regard to how we can be humanitarians and conscious humanitarians at the same point. This is a field that, once it's embraced in government, I mean, once there's a real, I got it, I mean, our world could change, you know, when we have conscious, mindful leaders in charge of the people. I mean, when you have what's going on in Libya right now, and then you look at, you know, a mindful leader who takes care of their people and supports awareness, it's like two different planets. So, God bless you, Ilonka. God bless your work. This has been, we have about 2 minutes left in the show, and this has been such a wonderful gift to provide your information and your wisdom to the listening audience here today. Thank you so much in everything you are and you do and what you're doing. I mean, you are a dynamo, my dear. Such an incredible
pioneer.
You are very
honored to be on the show and to be speaking to everyone today. And, you know, I hope that just one life has been touched, and, you know, one person will hear something that really helps them to get over a hard time. That would be great. So I hope that each soul is out there open to what I've said and to open their eyes to the opportunities that are there. When you think that there is nothing left, there's always another opportunity. I was saying, I don't know how I'm going to get this word out and launch this thing by the fall. And I said, God, okay, this is your program, so it's in your hands. And the next day, here comes along the summit where, you know, I have this opportunity to get it out to the world. So nothing's as final as we make it.
And you're linked up, so the manifestation probably happens, you know, as soon as soon as you think it, you seem to have validation on that. And that's the beauty of mindfulness and alignment with the energy and frequency.
Yes. Knowing that you're hooked in with everyone.
That's it.
That's wonderful.
That's it.
Yes.
Now, I have your links up here. I have thinklink.com, but that's not going to be live until this weekend. I have your link, your IlankaHarizi.com. I have that link up here on our chat room. I have the chat rooms full of people. Everyone is buzzing here. They've loved
okay.
you. So
there's
thank
Tesla.
You.
There's Tesla. Tesla.com as well. If you want to know more about
Tesla.
Tesla.com.
Yes, because we had some people asking where can they get the Tesla watch, and I put up here.
Tesla.com. And then there's Tesla. TeslaWatchRepair.com, because a lot of people, because Philip Stein is no longer handling the chips, and so a lot of people need their chips replaced, or we now have our new super chip that's going into our new watch coming out this fall, and so that repair site will be very helpful. It's TeslaWatchRepair.com. That's up. And TeslaScience.com. If someone would really like to study the science a little more and, you know, they want to get it into the real meat of it, TeslaScience.com is full of the science.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much, Ilanka. You are a gift. I can't wait to talk to you again on this show after your Russian summit. We're going to talk again. God bless you. And let's talk soon. I'm going to send you an email. Thank you again for being on our show, Ilanka Harizi. Thank you. God bless you. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Have a wonderful week. Many blessings, expected and unexpected. Tune in next week. God bless. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Adding the choice of a crispy chicken BLT to Wendy's 4-for-4 is the biggest thing since rappers trying to sing.
I got me out and I sound like a robot.
But do you like the sound of this? Wendy's 4-for-4 now comes with a choice of a junior bacon cheeseburger or a crispy chicken BLT.
From Detroit to Macon, I keep it crisp like bacon.
Both are topped with crispy applewood smoked bacon and come with 4 nuggets, fries, and a Coke for just $4.
Oh, yeah.
At participating Wendy's for a limited time, meal includes small fries and a drink. Not valid in Alaska and Hawaii.
When customers ask me which protein is best, I say it depends on your goals. To help build strength, support recovery, now the world's best protein powder formulas are buy one, get one half off. We'll find the right one for you. Just ask. We make it simple. GNC.